Hello, everyone. I'm Ana Maria Toronto, the Vice President of Marketing at Cinzi. Welcome to today's webinar presentation, hosted by Cinzi and featuring Mary Freebed Rehabilitation Hospital. We are delighted that Dr. Dermeyer, an esteemed clinical psychologist, and Jason Peoples, Director of Technology and Innovations at Mary Freebed, will be sharing their experiences and insights. Today's presentation is being recorded, and the recording will be sent to all attendees and registrants later this week. All participants are muted. If you have a question, please use the Q&A tool in this webinar platform. We will respond to the questions at the end of the webinar.
Thank you, Ana Maria, for the introduction. My name is Jason Peoples, and I'm the Director of Technology and Innovation at Mary Freebed Rehabilitation Hospital. And today I have with me Dr. Dermeyer, one of our esteemed clinical psychologist at Mary Freebed, and we'll be talking a little bit about telehealth and some of the use cases and really having a focus on clinical psychology in rehabilitation. So some of the housekeeping items, disclosures. So Dr. Dermeyer is employed as a clinical psychologist and Jason is employed as the Director of Technology and Innovation at Mary Freebed. No financial or relevant non-financial relations exist. So the objectives for our session today are really to outline the definition of telehealth and virtual care, also outline the impact and considerations of virtual care, and get into some operational tactics, also provide an overview of clinical psychology use cases via telehealth as the care delivery mechanism, outline the ethics considerations for our providers and patients who are also consumers, and describe clinical care delivery expectations to meet patient and consumer demands. So at Mary Freebed, I wanted to just highlight with what our mission and vision is. Mission at Mary Freebed is restoring hope and freedom through rehabilitation. Our vision is simply to be the national leader in high-value rehabilitation and post-acute care to develop an integrated system of care. So let's talk about virtual care. Virtual care, I've been in this space for a little over 11 years, and it's really hit mainstream, I think, thanks to the COVID pandemic. So what we wanted to focus on at Mary Freebed with our virtual care is really enhancing access, the timeliness, and convenience. And the key principles that we focus on in our virtual care delivery is we want to focus on improving access, so that would be people, consumers alike, and really eliminating or minimizing the distance as a barrier. Also wanted to focus on the communication. The communication is key to healthcare. Having a voice and video interaction via virtual care is something that is more insightful, I think, than even providing some conversations via a phone call where you can glean some information just by interacting with that person, reading facial features, having that communication, maintaining the connection, the integrity makes sense. So we want to incorporate that into some of our key principles. Also, retaining the integrity and the therapeutic value of the services that we provide via virtual care. So early on, even before the pandemic, when we started down this pathway at Mary Freebed for virtual care, you can imagine that our physical therapists, our occupational therapists, and our speech language pathologists, our PM&R physicians, they were trained to touch and feel and manipulate people. So all of a sudden, you take that tactile element out of the equation, and it's like a fish out of water. Oh my gosh, what can I do? What can't I do? I can't do this and I can't do that. So we really wanted to flip the script and focus on this, looking at through this as a half glass full conversation. So let's not talk about what you can't do. Let's talk about what you can do. But we really wanted to maintain the integrity and really drive the value for therapy services that could be provided in a virtual environment. So along with those, we wanted to also focus on the safeguards and the security, not just from a technology perspective through HIPAA compliance and secure communications channels, but also safeguards to those people that were serving in non-traditional locations. We'll get into that a little bit later. And really connecting with any person, any place, anywhere is like the wild, wild west. We don't know where that person is, but we want to provide that security, the safeguards to that person in the comfort of their own home or wherever they might be at the time of service. Also, we wanted to take into account, of course, with what the regulatory guidelines are. So CMS does a great job every year of outlining with what the telehealth guidelines are. And those guidelines really stipulate with who can provide the telehealth services, where the person can be at time of service, along with what the services are. So those are defined by the HCPCS and the CPT codes. So Also taking into account with what the HIPAA compliance considerations are, business associates agreements, things like that, really some of the housekeeping work that leads to what the conduit is for the virtual care. So simply put, virtual care is following the trend of all technology advancements. We're providing a service that people can access in the palm of their hands. So with our virtual care expectations, we really wanted to focus on delivering the value through the experience and the quality of our operating efficiencies. So we really wanted to walk that talk of putting that patient first. So we value what that patient is, putting the person at the center of everything that we do. And from a technology perspective, we wanted to focus on what is a scalable infrastructure, something that could work with us yesterday, but work with us today, and also provide the foundation for what the future will look like. So what is interactions with virtual care beyond simple voice and video? We can incorporate secure messaging. We can incorporate remote patient monitoring devices as all part of the scalable infrastructure. So that was something that was really, really important to us. Also the security, we wanted to make sure that we were looking at this from a security perspective from HIPAA. So what are the HIPAA compliance considerations? What are the business associates agreements that need to be kind of checked in that box to maintain the integrity of the platform and minimizing or mitigating some of the risk that it puts on the organization as well as our technology partners? Another key principle that we focused on too, and I think that this is a testament to our scaled efforts that we were able to really flip the switch pretty quickly when COVID did hit with Mary Freebed, was we needed to engage our workforce. So we needed to work with all of our operational leaders and frontline staff. So that would be direction from above, from a top-down approach, but also partnering elbow to elbow with our workforce. So these are the people that really make the magic happen along with our clinicians. So people that are answering the phones, they're rescheduling appointments, really engaging those team members and developing with what the workflow is. So it really mirrors with what we do as in-person visits, but something that we wouldn't have to create our own separate process for a virtual care visit. So as we've been engaging the workforce in this new environment on a broad scale, it certainly has impacted the culture. And again, we want to roll back to thinking about, well, I haven't done this before, or I can't do this. Well, let's talk about what you can do, looking at it through the glass half full approach. And also looking at adopting a service as a mindset. So this is a little bit different shift in thinking and really goes back to what we have been focused on all along is if you do what's best for that person, that patient, you can't go wrong. So we look at this as a service that's provided to the patient. So we wanted to make sure that every step of the way we're working with our patients, providing reassurance, especially in these unsettling times, using technology that people have in the palm of their hand or have access to at their home, whether that's a computer, a tablet, a smartphone, but really provide that service to those people to, again, provide the reassurance in addition to working with all of our staff members from our registration staff to our leadership, along with the clinicians, the psychologists, the physicians that are on the front lines providing this value-add service in a way that maybe they didn't think they could do before. So we really wanted to focus on the customer service on all aspects of what we do with our virtual care. In a forward-thinking approach, we really recognize that the disruptive technologies will positively drive the digital transformation in healthcare. So if we think about the technologies that we have that we can purchase off the shelf today, such as an Apple Watch being able to do so many functions, we know that the technology is not going to be the detriment in how we really engage with the healthcare systems. It's the healthcare systems that usually are not ready to adapt those technologies. How do you take consumer technologies and pull that into the healthcare setting? What is all this information that we're able to get and on our smartphones or our watches, and how do we get that to our healthcare providers? So we really want to recognize this, embrace this, and then take action. So we touched on this a little bit earlier related to the CMS guidelines as of April 2020. So CMS has outlined distant site practitioners. These are the providers that can provide telehealth services and have Medicare, Medicaid reimbursement. So we focus on the physicians, the nurse practitioners, PAs, clinical psychologists, clinical social workers, registered dietitians, and nutrition professionals. And as of April 2020, because of the pandemic, for the first time, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy have been added to the list of distant site practitioners. I think we're all anxiously waiting to see what CMS guidelines stick. as far as once the public health emergency has been rescinded, but there's been a lot of traction, a lot of voices that are really advocating for the need for PT, OT, and speech in particular to be recognized as valuable services that can be provided via telehealth / virtual care. So reimbursement is interesting. So there's a few different models that I just wanted to touch on real quick is in a perfect environment where you've got a person at one location, you've got a consulting provider or a distant site practitioner at a remote location, what will Medicare and Medicaid, what will they reimburse for? We're in an interesting time with the public health emergency as a lot of the restrictions on person's place at time of service, meaning the patient where they are, have been rescinded. So there is billing and reimbursement for services that can be provided to a person or to a provider providing a service to a person at a non-brick and mortar location. So taking out the rural clinics, the critical access hospitals, and some of those underserved areas. And really that's been exciting to see with telehealth and how this has blossomed over the last 6 months or so to see really what we can do with this and imagining the technology to work with people in places and environments that they're comfortable with in ways that we can serve those people. Commercial payers, out-of-pocket payments are also certainly payment mechanisms. So as we recognize in commercial payers that there is a shift toward value-based care, also high deductibles, HSAs. So all of a sudden we are pushing people to be consumers of healthcare, which is vastly different than the way that it has been before. So we're seeing that people are willing to do virtual visits, whether that's an on-demand session, or again, being an informed consumer of when do I want access to care and how do I want that? Is it convenient for me to leave work to go to a provider appointment? Or could I just do this in the comfort of my own home or in other non-traditional locations? So it's really interesting that the commercial payers are starting to reimburse for those telehealth services, even outside of the Medicare and the Medicaid guidelines. And of course, the out-of-pocket payments as we develop a fee for service for some of these, where it would be more of, is it more convenient for me to pay $20 as a copay, or let's say $49 for an interaction that I can have on my phone, again, anytime, anyplace, anywhere, on demand? Is it more valuable to me to pay for that fee out of pocket than it would be for me to take time out of the day to go to the clinic, to park, to go into the waiting room, to sit with maybe 15 other sick people for 20 minutes, come back to my appointment, leave the appointment, go back to work or go home? So we think about the convenience and the access to care. So that, again, kind of drives some of the key principles with our virtual care strategies at Mary Freebed. So in rehabilitation, we really want to focus on, you know, what's best for that person, as with all healthcare. But we recognize the access challenges. So we talked about the convenience of people really leaving their work, leaving their home to come to an appointment. So in rehabilitation, we have a lot of patients that have limited mobility. A lot of these patients are also in long-term treatment plans. And there's certainly no shortage of healthcare providers. And that's certainly not unique to Michigan or Grand Rapids or Traverse City, which is not the center of the universe, but ways that we can recognize that there is a disparity in people where they live who are also very loyal to their communities. How do we outreach to those people? What are the services that we can provide? So that was, again, kind of rolling into what we could do to leverage the strategies with our virtual care, recognizing this. And especially with the provider shortages where you have people that are really looking to partner with other physicians, other practices in a metropolitan community where they're looking at their colleagues, but also providing outreach efforts. Again, in rehabilitation, complex care is really important. So recognizing that not everybody is able to come to every single visit, it's really complex and it leaves for a very frustrated person at the end of the day. So again, I think that if we put the person at the center of what we do, we can't go wrong. We want to eliminate or alleviate some of these frustrations that people have in access to care. You know, looking at a forward-thinking approach to, you know, we want to enable people with technology. So if you look at the Amazon versus retail model, it's really interesting where being able to use a website or an app from Amazon versus going to the retail store. So it is absolutely convenient for us to log on to Amazon right now and place an order. We can have that order oftentimes delivered to our house in 2 days. So there's a lot of brick and mortar buildings, a lot of businesses that we've read, we've seen, that have not adopted the Internet of Things, being able to really brand their business in a way that's in line with the age of the internet. So we're seeing a lot of brick and mortar shops closing in favor of the convenience of Amazon. So it's also taken shape in the Airbnb, the VRBOs. So looking at that versus hotels. So I want the transparency. I want to be able to go online. I want to be able to shop for what I'm looking for. And I want the graphic. I want a quick review of what this is. And I want a description. And I want that price transparency. That's a very different model than going into a physical hotel on the fly to see if you can get an appointment. I'm sorry, not an appointment, but a room. So in the transportation industry, looking at how Uber and Lyft, both technology companies, have really changed the landscape with hailing down a taxi on the corner. So again, the transparency with Uber, Lyft, you launch an app on your phone, you're able to order a ride on demand, you can see where that person is, you know what car they're driving, you know who to look for, you also know the price. The other piece I really like with the Lyft model is almost right before you get out of that ride to your final destination, you're pinged with a quick question. Hey, rate your ride today. Was it 4 stars? Was it 5 stars? So really incorporating that quick instant gratification for data capture, I think is really, really interesting. Being able to capture that on demand, you haven't lost a patient, you're not sending out a survey. It's really a pop-up right then and there. I think that's a fascinating model and maybe some areas that we can incorporate into healthcare data collection as well. So Netflix versus Blockbuster, I think this pretty much says it all. Blockbuster, tried and true, brick and mortar business model. I think there's one in the country left, and I think it's sort of a joke in a way. I've heard people even renting out Blockbuster just to have, I don't know if it's a meeting there, if it's an overnight or what it is, but I found it really interesting. Netflix certainly came in on-demand subscription services, sending physical discs to your house. And then now we're able to access Netflix on demand on any internet-enabled device whenever you want. So we shift toward healthcare. What was healthcare yesterday? It's really coming into the office. We've taken a further step back away from those personal interactions with actually making house calls. We have big, robust clinics. We have hospital systems. What is healthcare today? So again, acknowledging the technology that we have, being able to embrace this in a consumer-centric environment is really the shift. So we have really looked at, we want to enable not only our healthcare systems, but our people, our patients, enabling with technology to drive the efficiencies. So goals we set with our virtual care, we really wanted to focus on, again, increasing patient access, increasing patient engagement, patient retention. So this could be a way that from a physical therapy setting where we have to articulate the value and the why. So if we have an environment where we have a patient that comes in that has subsequent multiple therapy visits, they may feel well enough after the fourth visit. Well, I feel well enough. Do I need to come back for this? I feel like I gained what I needed to learn from this and I don't need to come back. Well, we want to engage those people so that they don't have any adverse effects. Virtual is certainly a way that we can reach those people. Also with satisfaction, not only from our clinicians, but from our patients as well. What are the metrics that we have outlined that we can really gain that satisfaction from people that are using the services and really focusing on those dynamics through the technology lens versus were you happy with your overall care? Because nobody is ever overall happy with anything. So goals two, we wanted to drive some clinical efficiencies so we can incorporate our virtual care strategy and our workflows into what we're already doing today so we can reduce the real stigma of one more thing. So the bottom line is really patient access to the right care, the right place, the first time. Everything that we do in our virtual care, and actually all we do at Mary Freebed, is we really want to focus on that person, put the person at the center of what we do. So as we look at this graphic here, we certainly are person-centered. We want to have the ideation. So you've got the light bulb at the top. We want to leverage the technology. And then the research and the data metrics all surround what's best for this person. So we can take traditional healthcare models and we can really adapt with what we want to do moving forward by using these four principles with the ideation, the technology, the data, and then the research behind that. The data will help drive the research, which can also drive ideation. But oftentimes the ideation and the technology will move much, much faster than the research piece. But I think all these pieces coming together have a nice synergy. In our virtual care space, we really wanted to leverage tools that people already owned. And what we found with our engagements with people, anytime, anyplace, anywhere, that over 90% of the time, the person, the patient, is using their smartphone. So that's pretty profound when you think about that. Using the device that you have with you at all times, there's certainly a fear of missing out, which is real. I don't have my phone, what am I missing? The average person pulls out their phone about 250 times a day. A lot of time that's out of habit. It could be thinking that they're just gonna pull out their phone to look at what the time is. Oftentimes they don't register that, they just pull it out because it's habit. So we wanted to recognize that, yes, this is a device that people have. It's their most personal device. So with their smartphone, what does it have? It has sensors. We certainly have alerts and notifications. It's got your calendar, messaging, geolocation, GPS, video camera. You can also take still pictures with this phone as well, smartphone. And then at the end of the day, what is the source of this device? It's really a phone. You can make phone calls with it too. So again, tool that everybody has, let's acknowledge that and leverage that and connect with people in ways that they're expecting right now, especially in the COVID environment. So with that introduction and overview from the technology perspective, I am happy to hand this over to Dr. Durmeyer, who will outline some of the case studies and take it from here.
My name is Dr. Heather Durmeyer, and I wanted to start by introducing myself a bit. I'm a clinical health psychologist, and I've been working for Mary Freebed for 2 years now. And I want to talk about the ways in which CINSE has really opened doors for us at Mary Freebed. Jason talked about the technological aspects of things, and I'd like to shift gears a little bit to talk about more of the clinical realm. There has been some very, very unexpected things that I would like to share with you and would like to prepare you a bit. I would like to also share that while I'm a clinical psychologist, I have also in the past worked as an adjunct professor for doctoral students. And my job with the doctoral students was to teach ethics courses. And what we know about doctoral students is that they think they're pretty smart and pretty competent, and that coming in using good common sense, they usually think that an ethics course is just kind of a basic course, a core competency, and that if they use common sense, they can cruise through. Well, my favorite thing to do in working with doctoral students was to show them how easily things can get from very cut and dry to gray. And we want to talk about that a little bit today. Having said that, I'd also like to preface our talk today by saying we won't be able to get into all of the processing of the case studies that are presented because, of time constraints. But what I'd like to do is to kind of present you with some scenarios in which, CINSE has opened doors and enabled us to work with people. So we may not be able to process my response to every situation and exactly what was said, but I do want to kind of, present some things that will get you thinking on your own and hopefully help you prepare you for what you may encounter. To begin, Mary Freebed is a rehabilitation hospital. And so we see a lot of folks who have been through trauma and have various types of chronic pain. And CINSE has been excellent in helping us open doors to people in a lot of different locations. It basically really opens the map and enables us to work with folks that may not be able to come in person for various reasons. So I do see people in person who would like to show up and have that, individual interaction, but I also do telehealth every day. So I rely on CINSE every day to be able to work and connect with my patients. So for some folks, and to preface this also, to share with you that we live in Traverse City, Michigan. Jason drove up here from Grand Rapids, which is where our main campus is for Mary Freebed. Traverse City is in upper lower Michigan, and this is a place where there is an absolute need for psychologists. So what we are doing is basically trying to tap into a clientele that has not only not had psychology, but also is, being introduced to new modes of communication. So this is, CINSE has enabled us to work with a lot of folks in a lot of different locations. Those with disabilities, for example, I've worked with numerous people who have had to have amputations, who live in rural areas, and they're not always able to get up and around, especially after the initial amputation. So that's one example of, you know, some individuals that we have been able to talk with. Working folks, you know, they're busy. They don't always have time to drive into the clinic. So this enables them to, you know, be able to be have a little more flexibility with their time. And then, you know, there's various auto insurance and workers' compensation. You know, Jason talked a little bit about reimbursement already. And these things are something to stay on top of, because these are things that continue to kind of adjust their telehealth policies, especially during the pandemic. So it's something to keep an eye on all the time if you plan to do any type of telehealth. You want to keep your eye on what, you know, what the current reimbursement status is, and so that you can be informed and also to inform the patient so there's no unexpected bills at the end of the day. I would like to talk about, you know, some experiences that I've had that were very unexpected. Now, one would expect that, you know, when somebody was coming into a telehealth visit, that they would consider it, you know, much, you know, like a medical visit that would be much like they would be in person. However, I'm finding that that is anything but, you know, the case. A lot of folks do handle it that way, but there are those who don't, in which case telehealth sometimes enables the patient to take things into their own hands and into their own domain. And I've found it to be very helpful to adjust my informed consent policy and what we talk about in advance accordingly. So for example, you see some pictures there on the screen and somebody, you know, in a car, you know, you wouldn't think that you would have to tell a patient, you know, you can't be driving while talking with a psychological consultation. But people have to be told that, you know, frequently. I've also had incidences where, you know, there are other people in the room that I would not have known that had I not asked. So for example, one time I was working with a teenager and I just asked, you know, do you have privacy to talk right now? Is there anybody else in the room? And she said, well, actually my mom is right next to me. I would have never known that had I not asked that question. So ask the questions. A neat thing about telehealth and use with Cinzi is that I can, you know, people are able to be with their pets. They're able to spend time with them. They're able to have them on their laps. Sometimes that's comforting and kind of a neat way, you know, to be able to do a session. Having said that, sometimes pets are very sensitive to emotional changes within people and don't always respond favorably. And so, you know, sometimes folks just, you know, they say, I don't know why my dog keeps acting up when I do telehealth. Well, because they're sensitive to emotional changes in the owner. And that's something to sometimes have to address with them. You know, there are incidences even after I address, you know, privacy issues and other people walking into the room that come up. For example, my favorite that happened just the other day, I was talking to somebody and there was a shadow on the wall right behind them of somebody walking by. The person's eyes never left the, you know, the screen, and I never would have known that somebody else was in the room had I not seen that shadow. And there are also sometimes I see reflections in their glasses and things like that. I've noticed that a lot of folks show up, you know, in bed or in bathrobes, things like that. And so again, getting back to your informed consent, it's important to kind of cover bases thoroughly to the extent possible because people do things that are unexpected. You want people to be comfortable, certainly, but at the same time, you know, this is a medical consultation. The other thing that I've noticed is that sometimes people have responses that are unexpected. So for example, I once had somebody who felt very nervous and she was, you know, talking kind of frantically. And this was only our second session. I had, you know, not known her well or for long. And about halfway through the session, I heard some water and I realized that she was in a bathtub. I never would have expected that in a million years. And so here's the woman who was trying to, I think, you know, comfort herself, self-soothe to get through some difficult things she needed to talk about. But she was also in a bathtub. So I didn't know that. The reason I didn't know that is because she had positioned the camera in a way that I could only see her head. And had she not moved her arm, I may never have been, you know, any the wiser. She had worked very hard to position the camera well. But when she moved her arm and I heard the splashing, you know, that was an indication that, oh my gosh, she's in a bathtub. There have also been incidences where I've tried to, you know, work with teenagers. And a bit of a challenge has been with, you know, abusive parents. So for example, with the pandemic, during lockdown in Michigan, we had to stay at home for a few months. And basically, I remember working with a child, or a teenager actually, whose father had been, you know, kind of a perpetrator of physical and verbal abuse. And while we were talking, she was in the car, actually, and I've had a lot of conversations with people in cars that are not in motion, because that's the only place that they feel that they can have total, you know, privacy. And, you know, while I was talking with her, the father came out and was kind of taunting her with a sign that said, you know, I love you, you know, you don't need this, that type of thing. So doing things with telehealth can absolutely open doors. I can't say enough good things about Cindy. I rely on it. Having said that, expect the unexpected. Okay. I want to talk a little bit also about some ground rules. You know, this is working with Cindy has a different flow. Just naturally with telehealth, then, you know, your normal kind of rhythm, getting people in and out, you know, who are coming in person. We can still schedule things as if we were operating in person, but it still has some different caseflow aspects to it that I wanted to talk about. We usually try to see people in person if we can, first for an initial evaluation and then extend into telehealth if possible. But I will admit that since the pandemic started, we've kind of loosened our policy on that, and just to enable people to even do evaluations from home. We also established with them, you know, since they do have easy access to us with telehealth and they're so used to using their devices, that, you know, we have to emphasize that, you know, we are not available on demand. You know, we were functioning as a rehabilitation hospital, and that all you know, appointments have to be pre-scheduled. Also, the other thing that I emphasize is that we're not for crisis care. We're not on call. That's not something that Mary Freebed is capable of doing. And quite frankly, I have a full caseload. I see back-to-back patients. I can't be expected to drop everything to talk to those individuals. So getting back to your informed consent, you might consider, you know, adding in that, you know, kind of setting the ground rules with that, and also providing some information for individuals who may be in crisis. You know, if we can't accommodate that, well, then where should they go? Give them that information in advance, so that they have that proactively versus, you know, instead of scrambling, you know, at the last minute when already in crisis. You know, we try to set those ground rules very carefully so that people understand what to expect, and to try to, you know, just establish, you know, some normal expectations. Okay, go ahead. We cover all of those things. The other things that, you know, is important are things like scheduling. Now, there's a lot that I would like to also basically talk about the learning curve. So there's a lot of different things that, you know, this can affect using Cindy. So it's affecting, you know, providers, patients, consumers, and expectations. We are all learning. We are all in the process of transition, adapting as we go. Like I said, we've got different, you know, we've got different insurance companies reimbursing at different rates at different times, and kind of always kind of adjusting their policies based on what we know about the pandemic. So we're all learning. Alrighty. So the other thing that I wanted to address were some of the, again, ground rules, ethics, expectations. We want to talk about, I would like to talk about location and state licensure. This has been a problem thus far for clinicians who don't know some of the rules. So bottom line is every state has different licensure policies. And that means because of that, you know, there is not always reciprocity from state to state, which means that the provider as well as the patient always have to be within the state that the provider is licensed in. So for example, if I were working with somebody for a year and that individual went down to Florida on a vacation, we would not be able to talk that week once that individual crossed state lines. They have to be in the state of Michigan, and you know, that has to be, you know, and that's another question to ask when you're having the session, you know, where are you located? And again, getting back to informed consent, letting them know in advance so that there are no surprises, that they know that if they go on vacation to Florida that, you know, or wherever, that you will not be able to talk during that week. Now, will those things change in the future? I'm not sure. I think that as technology, you know, continues, people continue to use technology and they continue to see the benefits of using CINSI telehealth, that people will, you know, that those policies may change, but I couldn't predict when. For now, we have to play by the rules and to be very vigilant about those rules because there can be really extreme consequences, you know, should there be an audit or should something happen to indicate that, you know, those things aren't being followed. So just want to tune you into those things. And also, you know, we talked about before, just kind of educating people in advance, you know, to try to minimize distractions in their surroundings, to try to be forthcoming about, you know, who might be around or interrupting. And again, you know, with crisis situations, really giving them some information in advance so that they know what to do if they are in need.
So let's talk about protecting our patients. So as we were looking at wide-scale adoption for telehealth, not only from our clinicians' perspective, but also for patients, so we wanted to take first into account, we always want to protect our patients. So what are some tactics? How do we do that? So we wanted to look at how do you do virtual check-ins? We wanted to engage our people in video visits, so the real-time voice and video interactions. And we wanted to continue delivering care in a safe manner. So that is reducing contact, that's certainly serving people in places and in formats that people have become accustomed to, but also protect our team members, our staff, any of those touch points that happen in a traditional in-person interaction with the healthcare system. Also wanted to protect our staff, you know, kind of building on what we had just talked about, keeping our staff safe. We wanted to enable our staff to be present for our patients. So again, early on in the pandemic with our, I'll spotlight physical therapy here real quick, with patients that were in active treatment. And as we closed down the doors for the clinic, or in a psychology instance where we wanted to make sure that our clinicians who were in active treatment or looking at scheduling initial evaluations, they could certainly be present for the patients when that time was scheduled with them. So we wanted to continue that treatment. Again, focusing on what's best for the person is really why we're here in healthcare. And an additional, we wanted to really reduce the anxiety for our staff. We have a lot of uncertainties right now. So providing any layer of reassurance to our team members, this is the why that we're here. This is the how we're going to do it. And the why is really because we want to help people. People are in need. So using virtual care, using CINSI as a platform that is really platform agnostic, we can connect with any person anywhere on any internet-enabled device. Doesn't matter if it's an Android device, an iPhone, iPad, or a Windows running computer. We can make those touch points with people so we're not limited by the technology. We can make that happen with ease. I think the technology is the easiest part, but again, we wanted to reduce the anxiety of our staff and patients alike. So lessons learned, I'll talk a little bit about this real quick. So we wanted to integrate virtual care into our existing workflows. Again, we wanted to look at what our processes are, and it was a great opportunity to not only review our processes, to add an additional piece to the puzzle, but it became a process improvement and it really drove the efficiency. So again, we wanted to reduce the stigma of, oh my gosh, there's one more thing I have to do. I have to double document. I'm doing double the work. That's certainly not the case in the Cinzi platform and how we have integrated that into our workflows. And then also starting small and building on the successes. So that was really a key factor to this. So even in the early days prior to the pandemic, where it seemed like we were carrying water uphill every day and recruiting clinicians, recruiting psychologists, recruiting physicians to be able to do and try something different. So we wanted to really, again, focus on starting small, building on those successes. And there was a cool factor with that too. Oh my gosh, so-and-so is doing this. Well, maybe I could do this too because it's kind of cool. So that's built and driven awareness. It's also helped build the excitement. And then again, with the tested successes that we had building upon the foundation, it was a really easy for us to scale this widespread. So those were just some of the lessons from the workflow and the technology standpoint. So let's talk about virtual care adoption real quick. So we live in an age of instant gratification. We want what we want, and we usually want it yesterday, or we want it right now, or we want it delivered to our house. So if we look at some of the trends moving forward, you know, we look at millennials, they're twice as likely as baby boomers to prefer retail clinic and acute care facilities for speed and efficient healthcare delivery. So we want access to healthcare and we want it right now. How do we do that? So that's where telehealth, telemedicine, virtual care have really come into play. So we recognize that over 60% of millennials, they have interest in telehealth. So we use video chats right now with our family members, our loved ones, our friends. There's multiple video apps that are available. Back in 2011, when the iPad 2 was introduced, you had FaceTime that was baked into the device itself. So you had video conferencing technologies that were consumer friendly. You don't need robust thousands and thousands of dollars of infrastructure to support these voice and video visits in a clinical context. How do you adapt the consumer expectations to healthcare? So that's something that we really wanted to recognize. And I think that it's really a testament to look at where the shift is with the millennials. And then again, looking at what the consumer-oriented healthcare experience looks like. So we know that over 75% of millennials look at online reviews and before they select a physician. So we know how easy it is to go to Dr. Google and do a Google search on anything. So for example, if we were to go on a Google search right now, type in low back pain, there are literally over 8 million results that pop up. You could be getting advice from the best clinician in the world or the best healthcare system in the world or the worst. It's kind of who's paid to play to have that top tier placement. So the reality is that people are using these tools today and it's informing their healthcare decisions. So we want to articulate the value and the why of the services that can be provided and then bridge that gap with telehealth as a delivery mechanism. So the technology that we use Cinzi for our voice and video interactions and secure messaging. And we're also looking at remote patient monitoring. So as we talk about some of the devices that are in consumers' hands right now, such as an Apple Watch or a Fitbit or a Garmin or whatever the latest Samsung watch is that talks to their phone, these are technologies that people have in the palm of their hands or on their wrist or in their pocket. So how do you aggregate that information and then leverage the technology for that in a healthcare setting? So we really looked at our virtual care efforts as an extension of our brand. We want to ask for Mary, and you can be virtually everywhere for that. Again, as Dr. Durmeyer mentioned, we have some restrictions with some of the guidelines right now with cross-state licensure, where the person can be at time of service. So that certainly provides some ethical considerations or an opportunity for more targeted strategic planning as part of your effort. So if you want to enter into another state, another market, build that into the considerations up front. How long would it take to recruit or look at licensing your providers in a different state? So build that into the strategy. And then the rehabilitation, that's what we live and breathe at Mary Freebed. Platform capabilities, we'll just spotlight this with Cinzi. So in addition to a secure communications pathway for not only voice and video, but we also have secure messaging that can be done in a HIPAA compliant way. So as we know, it's really easy to send a text message or use iMessage. Well, why can't we do that with healthcare? Well, we can. We just have to recognize what the capabilities are of the technology and leverage that for meaningful use cases. So not only voice and video interactions, but secure messaging and also the ability to take a picture. So you think about that store and forward situation where I can snap a picture now, send it in and have somebody provide some guidance or even advice or treatment later down the line in a HIPAA compliant way. So as we talk about RPM, remote patient monitoring, this is where I see a lot of evolution in the virtual care space. Again, leveraging these technologies, whether that's a smart watch or a smart blood pressure cuff or a smart scale, aggregating that information into a singular platform as your one-stop shop is certainly key to, again, to reducing some of the thoughts of, oh my gosh, this is one more thing that I need to do.
To talk next about some of the experiences I've had with logging on. I would recommend, number one, it seems pretty common sense, keep calm and pick up the phone. So if there are by any chance any connectivity issues, whether you know it be on your end or the you know the patient's end, you know, you want to try to not panic in those situations because and to pick up a phone and try to contact them by phone so that they know, you know, that you're reaching out to them, that you're there on the other end. And, you know, maybe they have a question about how to log in, you know, and just try to talk them through it in a way that's calm, cool, and collected. This doesn't happen often, but when it does, you know, it can be much more stressful than you would anticipate. Because there's always the feeling of, oh gosh, you know, I have to be able to connect with them within a certain time frame or they're going to bail. They're going to think that this doesn't work or that, you know, they're going to lose interest. Or in particular, if you have somebody who's coming, you know, signing on for an evaluation for the first time and maybe seeking psychological services for the first time in their life, you want that to be a pleasant and welcoming experience for them. So, I have experienced myself kind of feeling that scramble trying to connect with somebody. And, you know, it does take some doing to just remind yourself, okay, stay calm. I'm going to pick up the phone. I'm going to call them. So it can be very helpful in advance to have any information that you need. So for example, every time you log on to Cinzi, you're going to need passwords every single time. And sometimes you're prompted to change those passwords. At least we are at Mary Freebed to be able to, you know, kind of keep those fresh and valid. So when you do that, have that information readily available so that you don't have to scramble. You don't have to log into your computer at the last minute, you know, kind of, you know, trying to find information in a frenzy. I don't know about you, but I myself have a lot of passwords and keeping them straight is no easy feat. So have that information readily available and, you know, do your best to try to, you know, handle those situations. Every now and then, Cinzi does an upgrade and, you know, or, you know, kind of, and that's not always expected. So I'd also recommend trying to log in a little bit early at the beginning of the day, just to be able to make sure that, you know, you have done any updates that are necessary and available. That way you've got smooth sailing for the rest of the day.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that. I think that we can all agree that technology is great, but it's even better when it works.
Overall, I feel that telehealth bridges access to care gaps, connecting individuals in different geographic locations. I love that Cinzi opens doors and I rely on it every day that I work. I can't say enough good things about it and very grateful for this virtual care platform.
I'm thankful for partnering with you, Dr. Dermeyer.
As well, Jason.
It's been a journey. So just in summary for the presentation, we just wanted to spotlight with what we were talking about today, understand the industry definition for telehealth. We wanted to outline some of the operational tactics and some of the considerations, and also outline some of the case studies for the clinical psychology, that perspective. And also touch on some of the ethical considerations when conducting psychology visits via virtual care. And also just talk about virtual care delivery expectations to meet people, patients, and consumers' needs and ultimately demands. So thank you everyone for attending our session this afternoon. Dr. Dermeyer and I's contact information is below. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out via email to either one of us. We'll be happy to work with you and field any questions or have any great ideas. We're always happy to field those and have some creative dialogue and conversations, all in the spirit of what's best for people and what we do in healthcare.
Thank you, Dr. Dermeyer and Jason, for sharing your experiences and insights regarding this extremely timely topic in healthcare.